You're listening to Toronto's number one real estate podcast, powered by Watson Estates. The most successful local real estate investing starts right here, right now. Here's your host, broker, investor, and social media influencer, Bradley Watson.
Good morning, investors. Bradley here from Watson Estates. Today is Thursday, September 24th. It's a great day for news because we've had a ton of stuff happen in the last 24 hours. I'm glad you're here. You're listening to the largest, fastest growing podcast for Toronto real estate on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And we don't ask for this a lot, but if you are listening on iTunes, which is our largest source of downloads, make sure you jump over and leave us a five-star review and let us know your thoughts and what value you're getting out of our podcast. It helps the channel and it helps my self-confidence. So we're going to jump into some great topics today. We're going to have a lot of fun. And there is so much. Even the hot topics are full of goodies. We're going to start off with discussing a prediction from Moody's that there will be a fall in prices in Toronto into 2021 of 9%. Not a small change. We're going to talk about why they think that. And then we're going to jump into the proposals made for Canadian housing that comes from the throne speech. You know that little thing that happened yesterday? Well, there was a bunch of stuff relating to real estate. We're going to dive into that. And then how will the city of Toronto get, or sorry, when will the city of Toronto get a vacant home tax? It's coming to a city near you very soon. We're going to discuss what that looks like. Now, the only experience, as we talk about the throne speech, that I've had with royals is pretty much just going through a Burger King drive-thru. So this is exciting for me. This is great. We're taking it to another level. But before we go there, and again, this is, I could put any of these topics. Every so often you get a day like this, it has so much stuff. You could just put them at the beginning, the end, doesn't matter. There is so much information in here. Well, I like to start with predictions because I find they're fun. So we're gonna talk with Moody's first and why they predict Toronto will drop by 9% in 2021. Here's what they say. The pandemic will punish prairie house prices the most in Canada, but even hotspots Toronto and Vancouver will see prices drop on the back of rising rental market vacancies and lower immigration rates, according to a new report. So they line it all up. They say the average single detached house price will fall by 6.7% next year. And the reason is because we've got the recovery stalling, economic stimulus fading, and debt problems increasing. Dun, dun, dun. Combined all housing types, there's a drop of more than 7% across the country. Toronto's on the high end of that because when we look at all of the numbers, Calgary and Edmonton, because of obviously the oil woes going out there in the West that continues, they're expecting about 10% peak to trough slide in prices. Regina is 9% and Toronto right below them, just under 9%. And Vancouver dropping by 7%. These are significant price drops that are being forecasted. They say this, the housing market will no longer be able to escape the poor conditions of the labor market as vacancy and delinquency rates rise in 2021. That comes from Abhilasha Singh at Moody's Analytics. We're gonna go with Singh. I don't know if it's a Mr. or a Mrs. Oh, this really leaves me hanging, doesn't it? The report follows earlier forecasts by the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation, which we just recently heard, where they stuck to their guns. We talked about this a couple days ago. Bob Dugan reaffirmed CMHC's position that we could see an 18% drop. Of course, right? We're going to have this thing. Like, you can't pull your punches now. But we're just stacking these negative views of the market. Oh, boy. Sounds to me a lot like March and April. High unemployment and lower income will restrain buyers' return to the market, Singh estimates. So will affordability issues in Vancouver and Toronto further. Slower in-migration flows to Canada due to COVID-19 disruptions will weigh on housing demand. Not even lower interest rates will be enough to save the housing market. Will they, guys? And this is the million-dollar question. You investors out there, like myself, you're always kind of trying to get ahead of the curve. What happens first here? Do we have high enough demand to meet the supply crunch we're going to experience? We're going to see supply numbers go through the roof. It's really not a crunch. Whatever the opposite of a crunch is. Expansion, right? An expansion of supply. Is the demand strong enough to meet that? If yes, prices will go up. If no, prices will come down. And in this case, they say no. Housing starts are forecasted to decline to 151,000 annualized units by the third quarter of 2021. So they're saying housing starts are stopping, pretty much coming down from first quarter when they were at 206,000. But the market will rebound in 2021 after vaccines have become widespread and prices for single family dwellings should rise by 4.6% in 2022. That's the prediction. So we're going to see prices come down on average across the country by about 7% in 2021 and then bounce back up again into 2022 at just under 5%. That's their thoughts. What are your thoughts? They say this: rental vacancy rates will rise in Toronto and Vancouver as an increased supply of rental units coincide with a fall in demand due to disruption of migration to Canada. And of course, we know immigration is a huge source of demand, so their arguments are legitimate, but do the numbers line up, right? Do they line up? I don't know. But then so we get articles like that, which is one side. But then I see stories, not only stories, but top publishing stories in Toronto real estate that just got me rolling my eyes. I'm gonna read for you this article, okay? It's called this: Adventures in Real Estate. I left Toronto, found the love of my life, and bought 14 goats. I'm not touchy-feely, guys, but listen to this one. In February, I met a guy online named Jeff who lives on a 72-acre hobby farm in Arthur, about 40 kilometers north of Guelph with his parents. Ooh, sounds like quite the catch. At the time, I was living in a two-bedroom apartment at Church in Adelaide with a roommate and my three dogs. After 3 days of hanging out together, we both knew it was love. 3 days turned into a month, which turned into 2 months. Then, at the end of July, we drove to Toronto, packed up my stuff, and I moved to the farm for good. Jeff and his parents only recently got internet. He didn't know what Netflix was, which I thought was cute, so I've been showing them all about it. Jeff's mom loves Kijiji. She just went crazy and bought 14 goats online. This is a real article. We're living in the in-law suite, and it's nice and private. I've gotten to know Jeff's 4-year-old son. So in addition to becoming a goat breeder, I have a 4-year-old best friend too. I call my partner's parents, my in-laws. It was pretty sudden transition, but I'm spontaneous by nature. What started as a 3-day date has turned into the rest of my life. Should I tell her or should you? Right? You move from the life of luxury, you know, that little condo there with your three dogs, to a petting zoo. You know what I call a royal pig that is falling asleep? Prince Nottingham. That is not a snoozer of a story, though. That is crazy. That is straight crazy. But this is what it's coming down to, guys. This is the picture of the person leaving spontaneously the city to go and live the rest of their life. So let's talk. So we've heard some predictions. They're crazy. And I think this story, though that one was a little bit more of an extreme one, the story is pretty persistent across our market, right? Everyone's running away for better things. They all want those 14 goats on Kijiji. Well, what do our viewers think comes next? Because we have a lot of really smart dudes and dudettes and girls, women. Can't call them girls. Call them boys, but you can't call them girls. Here's some of the thoughts. Some of the bears out there, Jonathan Alfonso, thank you for your comment. I feel like there's a ton of people that don't even want to hear a mention of weakness in the market. It takes a really strong person to admit that they could lose money, especially when Ontario real estate has produced so much wealth for so many people. I, like you, are not afraid to call out the weakness in the market. As a producer of content, I'll tell you one thing. People love bad news. They love it. So I would go the other side on that. It's honestly, you mentioned weakness in the market, people just start salivating. It's the reason that the headlines are always so negative in the news. But anyways, good point. Appreciate the thought. I try and keep a balanced view here. Another thought, Paul's Health and Fitness, thank you for your comment. If Watson Estate says the real estate market is softening, it basically means it's going to crash. This guy will never give the negative on real estate. I try my best. And then we jump over some of the bulls in the room. Here we go. Billy Meyer, everyone bearish on the housing market, just like post-COVID. Now, I don't know if he's bearish or bullish, but to me, it sounds bullish because I'll tell you, when COVID first happened in March, my advice, it was a conversation with my family because we had to discuss, am I going to tell all my clients to stop doing real estate? This was an honest conversation. As soon as the pandemic happened, the closures took place because I honestly believe prices were coming down. And that's when I started the podcast, by the way. And that's why we were talking about that. But we made the decision to contact all our clients and said, just wait, just be patient and wait. Which is crazy coming from the perspective of a real estate professional. But within a month, like I'm not even kidding, within a month, I had to circle back to all of them and say, hey guys, we've reached the bottom. Prices are going to start coming back up. There's a stability in the months of inventory, which we were talking about in our podcast. And from there on out, I encourage people, and most of them were reluctant to do anything, which is the nature of the market, but some did. And some made hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'm not even kidding. Some qualified for properties they never even dreamed they could have just years ago. So here we go. We also got a comment from Baseline: average price this month will come in at its highest. It's going to push those limits, guys. It really is. So many people, because my content is very wide, I like to reach I like to be fair. I try and create a balanced platform where you can see the negatives and the pros. We want to talk about what comes next. Is it bullish? Is it bearish? And I think for that reason, and especially with some of my guests, the one we did on the Power of Sale yesterday came off very, very bearish. But people assume I'm negative about the market for that reason. But that's not true, right? I'm actually quite bullish, if you ask me. I don't personally expect prices will drop through the winter. And it's common in the winter months you see prices come down. I actually think they're going to be relatively flat. They might even go up through the winter time into next year. Could things change? Yes, absolutely. But the news, in my opinion, and some of the headlines that I use even in my article, they're clickbaity. They scare people. And the funny thing is the headlines that I use are really just copies from headlines of newspapers. That's why sometimes they come off really bearish. But if you want a way to buy an investment property like those who did in April against my advice, go ahead, right? But don't start selling your units. Do yourself a favor. The city is about to get a whole lot more expensive. So let's look to the buy side, whether we're gonna wait or hold, but let's not dump everything away, run off to the suburbs, buy a bunch of goats, and teach our mother-in-laws and our new son about Netflix, okay? And there's a little topic here. Toronto condo dwellers flock to exurbs, creating a domino effect. Here's the trend that's happening, guys. This article is talking about two cities. It's talking about Hamilton, which is a frenzy, right? If you've talked to me at all personally, or we've really listened to the podcast, Hamilton is nuts. It's nuts, guys. And it's all because of the demand coming from Toronto. It's a domino effect, they say, though. And now it's overflowing into Niagara. It really is. So it's saying this, in turn, Toronto condo market is finally cooling off, something that appeared improbable at best at the beginning of the year. Sales of units in the second quarter were down 50% from the same time last year. The number of pre-sale condos has slipped further, falling 85% because investors who are usually responsible for gobbling up two-thirds of these units are playing it safe. Well, the trend is that they come, they buy your condo, you leave the city, and you start moving outwards, where greener pastures. But what's happening here is COVID is really pushing that. And there's a quote here, it's kind of cute. It's incredible. 136,000 over asking with only four offers is unheard of. That's in Hamilton, right? It used to be that each offer would go up by an increment of 5,000. And in my head, if there's 20 offers, it's about 100,000 over asking. I've never seen this with four offers. That's cute. Average house prices are up 21% and 7.7% fewer days on market right now in Hamilton, but it doesn't stop there. The domino continues and it's pushing out to what they're calling now, this new term that has kind of come out of nowhere that even I use now, is the exurbs. The exurbs, right? They're not the suburbs, they're the exurbs. They said, Zerini, this agent that's out in Niagara, said his firm recently sold a home in a suburb just outside of Hamilton for a price about $1 million and moved to St. Catharines, where they were able to upsize and get a pool for just over $700,000. According to the Niagara Association of Realtors, sales were up more than 37% in August, while listings were up nearly 10%. And they say this is this particular agent, Milan from Niagara. I think it's actually crazier than Hamilton. Woo! Man, these prices are being pushed up, though, recognized by Toronto buyers, right? These are people local moving to this place. These are right now very high returns. They are. But they're also very high risk because we are relying on a trend that we don't really know if this is going to continue in the long term. In fact, I've seen a lot of people arguing that the move that's going to happen has already happened. So I would be reluctant to say that these exceptional price growths in the suburbs or exurbs will continue. And so just be careful. Just be careful. Okay, let's move on. We're going to talk about the throne speech. I know you guys are sitting patiently. Appreciate it. We've all been waiting for the throne speech since last week, and it is so exciting. It reminds me of when the royal baby name was finally revealed. But seriously, who names their kid finally revealed? Oh, come on. You don't remember when the first baby was born, the royal baby? It feels like just yesterday. I even remember it weighed almost 9 pounds, which in Canadian dollars, I think is just over 15 bucks. All right, so what was proposed? And this one actually got really easy for me to analyze because the Canadian Real Estate Association sent an email to every single one of its members. So if you're a realtor, you might have even seen this in your inbox, unless you have it set to spam, which sometimes it is. And they talk about the highlights as it relates to real estate that came out of the throne speech. Here's what they say. Today, Her Excellency the Right Honorable Julie Payette, Governor General of Canada, delivered the speech from the throne, titled, quote, A Stronger and More Resilient Canada, to officially open the second session of the 43rd Parliament. The speech was triggered when Prime Minister Justin Trudeau asked the Governor General to prorogue Parliament on Tuesday, August 18th, effectively ending all ongoing work and setting the stage for government to lay out their plans for Canada's recovery from the COVID pandemic, right? Now, this has big implications because if it doesn't get approved, then we're going into an election. So all of these things really matter. And what exactly are they bringing forward? Well, they've got different foundations, but here's some of the key takeaways that Korea says is coming. Number one, housing was mentioned multiple times during the speech, including the role of the housing sector as a key driver of the economy and as a job creator. So the Canadian Real Estate Association is pleased to see home ownership remain a government priority as they announce their intention to continue supporting first-time home buyers. For the middle class, the government will also move forward with enhancements to the first-time home buyer incentive. Now, I didn't watch the full speech, but I would only assume, because this is now relating to larger cities, enhancements would mean just a higher price point for these first-time homebuyer incentive program, which didn't really include and definitely now doesn't include the price points for starter homes. This is pretty much just the government partnering with you because grandma won't do it or you don't want to ask grandma to do it, where they'll put a certain amount of money into the deal. Now, if the property goes up, they want their cut. The property comes down, they'll share the burden. But that's a pretty worthwhile risk to take as a government, isn't it? And the government also confirmed their intentions to make Canadian housing stock more energy efficient while creating jobs for Canadians to retrofit homes and buildings, something Korea has proposed in our writing submissions to the House of Commons Standing Committee on Finance. Korea has supported calls for solutions to creating affordable housing and was pleased to see investments through the Rapid Housing Initiative announced earlier this week. If you didn't hear about that, that's okay. I didn't actually announce it because it's news to me too. Apparently I got caught off guard. Here we go. In the coming weeks, the government of Canada through CMHC is launching a $1 billion rapid housing initiative to help address urgent housing needs of vulnerable Canadians by rapidly creating new affordable housing units. The initiative will cover the construction of modular housing, as well as the acquisition of land and the conversion of existing buildings to affordable housing. So they're spending a ton of money, $1 billion, to be exact, to buy land and to build modular housing to try and help people get into homes. And of course, there's other announcements that are more headliners, right? The Canadian Emergency Wage Subsidy will be extended into the next summer. We've got the CEBA, the Canada Emergency Business Account, which has enhancements in the business credit availability program as well. And there are also further mentions of a revamped EI program, which is going to replace CERB. And these are all the things that you probably have heard, not as much on the real estate stuff. The speech can be debated for up to 6 days, after which a vote on the main motion is held. And of course, if not accepted, Canadians will be going to the polls before the end of 2020. And I saw another article, because really, I don't like to dive too far into politics because I get a little too opinionated. And really, I'm not that educated, but I am, but I'm not. And there's an article I saw here with conservatives out, liberals need bloc or NDP support to avoid election. The current standing, though, is conservatives right out of the gate said that they're not going to support in no way give any confidence to the proposals given by the liberals. The question is will the NDPs or the bloc? The NDP leader Jagmeet Singh said they're going into the speech that before his party, this pre-announcement on the throne speech, that they will agree only if they extend CERB, which is a crazy thought, extend CERB, and paid sick leave, like creating an extended paid sick leave for every employee across the country to ensure no Canadian has to go to work sick. While there were no specific mentions of paid sick leave in the speech, the Liberal government announced $1.1 billion to pay for sick leave as part of the government's, quote, safe restart agreement. The program entails having the provinces use legislation to give workers 10 days of sick leave related to COVID-19. So part of their requests were there, unless we're going to get an extension on CERB, which would be insane if that did happen. That would be a lot of influence from NDP. Do they have that much power? No. They are desperate, in my opinion, to maintain the seats that they've got. They don't want an election. They don't want to lose the power. And so I don't think there's any way they're going to risk that loss, which is the exact opposite of Harry, who left the royal family to become an American painter somewhere. I don't know. He'll forever be the artist formerly known as Prince. They just need to satisfy the NDP, right? To get the confidence vote, right? We don't need block. I mean, besides, what are the blocks asking for? If we were to read into the article further, it's probably, what are they asking for? Like, they want us to redirect all production of tiny chisels so they can begin physically separating themselves from the rest of Canada? I don't know. Does it matter? No, it doesn't matter. The NDP are more likely, in my opinion, than not, going to agree to whatever they need to keep the power, which means no election in the winter. If not, it could be wrong, and that would mean, obviously, more spending in our city, which would boost housing prices even further. Win-win? Is that a win? I don't know. Depends if you own a property or not. All right. We're going to do some hot topics. Got a bunch of hot topics. We're going to fly through these because they're all good and I don't want to miss one. John Tory yesterday at City Hall, he made an announcement. He said that they are going to bring on four actions. And they're these. One, implementing earlier closing hours for late night bars and restaurants. Requiring employees to wear masks in places for a long period of time, urging the province to limit the number of further guests for weddings, venues, and banquet halls, and allowing city properties to be used for pop-up testing in areas where there are many COVID cases. So all this to say, the city is doing what it can, trying to limit the spread of COVID-19, which is a good thing, but it also points in the direction that if it don't work, are we ready to ramp it up? Are we ready to keep the closures coming? I think yes. But there's a limit to that, and we'll see. Can we get a handle on COVID? If not, all bets are off. Next topic. Toronto just canceled all major events for the rest of 2020. This should be big news, right? You think it'd be bigger news? That's everything, right? 115th annual Santa Claus Parade, the 2020 World Poutine Eating Championship, and so much more. It should be bigger news, but you know why the Royal Reading got more publicity than the news, than all major events being closed? It's because the royal wedding doesn't happen every week. These closures, they do. So, old news, so what? All right, we're going to move on. This I find hilarious, so, but not. You can't say hilarious. This is a serious thing. Nationalpost.com. This is an article that says, sorry, I'm sick. Toronto open house held as tenant later found to be COVID positive lay in upstairs bedroom. So this guy had a sign on his door of his bedroom saying, sorry, I'm sick. And he's kind of self-isolating because he got tested for COVID and he hadn't got the results. Well, it turned out he was tested positive, and everyone who attended the open house, hopefully they all got kind of traced. They were given these contact tracing calls. But it's interesting. I never really thought of it. We have questionnaires for buyers before you have them come through your house. You get them to fill out all these COVID sheets, whatever. But we don't really have questionnaires for the sellers, or at least I've never really heard of such a thing, or for the tenants. Maybe some people are doing it. It wouldn't be a bad idea for those of you agents out there who are listening. Maybe consider doing questionnaires just to protect yourself, because this poor agent looks actually really bad now that they did an open house and meanwhile having a sick person in the bedroom. Okay, next hot topic. Building materials are hard to get your hands on right now, which is driving up prices. The data agency says home buyers expect the record high lumber prices this year will rise, most likely add an extra $5,000, $10,000 to the cost of a single family home. In the short term, it's expected that the shortages of lumber and building supplies will persist due to the uptick in home buyer demand, the increased renovation activities in North America, as well as the lingering effects of the reduced operations at sawmills earlier this year. We are seeing a big price getting jacked up, according to Statistics Canada and the New Housing Price Index, which found that newly built homes rose in August by 0.5%. We gotta be careful, right? And skilled laborers and now material costs are already too expensive. And yet, AREA, as we talked about the other day, is asking for grants to renovate your house, which will further push up the prices, right? We're limiting the supply already. It's already there and we're pushing demand. It's all a game. We know it's all a game. And you know what's the only thing professional poker players and plumbers can agree on? A royal flush is better than a full house. I'm really not hitting these punchlines today, guys. You're just going to have to enjoy the jokes, but not the punchline. All right, here we go. We're going to move on. I saw a really interesting article from TVO, and I know this didn't pop up anywhere. This is one of those secret articles. It's a secret article. They say this, in search of a more peaceful environment, newcomers leave the GTA for new homes up north. A very interesting concept. They're talking about how the federal rural and northern immigration pilot project that was created, this is just kind of in recent years made, it involved 11 cities. And I want you to just kind of think about what implications this would have on the GTA. Five of them are Ontario are North Bay, Sault Ste. Marie, Sudbury, Thunder Bay, and Timmins. These areas are under this pilot project from the federal government, which we don't really know if it's going to work, but it's trying to draw immigration to those rural communities. And we've seen this recently. An Ontario-focused program was launched in 2016 called the Rural Employment Initiative. And it actually has seen, they say here, a moderate level of success over the last 5 years. And they've got the story of this individual, which I'm not even going to try to read their name because I'm going to butcher it. But they are a mechanical engineer. They have 13 years of experience working in automotive safety systems. And after months of searching, they were hired as a project manager for $17 an hour in Mississauga. They got two kids and they realized their living expenses totaled more than $2,000. Well, pre-COVID, they attended an event by the NCP, which he met a community representative from Sault Ste. Marie in Thunder Bay. And they were offered a salary job of an engineering and plant manager at a solar energy company earlier this year. And of course they took the job and they moved away. What an interesting thing. I don't think people realize, and I don't think I even really realized, the pull of new immigrants to the GTA away from the GTA. And now we've seen the federal government taking steps to do it, but we've seen the provincial government now successfully doing it for the last 5 years. All of these things, these smaller communities, are going to continue to try and pull the immigrants away from here. And if they're successful, does that mean that we're going to have less coming to the GTA? Or is it just going to encourage more people to come because now there's a lower cost of living for new residents? I don't know. But we need to keep this in mind because this, in line with this trend of people leaving our city, it's if immigration doesn't come to our city to replace the people that are leaving our city, what a problem we have, right? We need to keep that in mind. Will it work or not? Will they have the specialty stores that they need out there? Probably not. But do they need that, or are they going to be successful because they're offering jobs to skilled workers that we in our city have refused or haven't done in a long time? This isn't a perfect example of small cities getting priority funding from the province and the federal government, which could really bring people away from cities like Toronto and move them away and with your tax dollars. Okay. We're going to get into a vacant home tax because I promised I was going to talk about that. And it's also something that's been up in the air for a long time, right? Politicians and the majority of Canadians believe, by the way, if you didn't already know, that the ultra rich, they deserve to be treated like royalty. Louis XVI specifically. And the royalty of our city is foreign money. It really is. So Toronto's housing market has not only failed to slow despite the global pandemic, but has seen sales and prices skyrocket in recent weeks, reinforcing a reputation as an overvalued city and certainly favors sellers. This article, this BlogTO article, continues. There are a lot of factors that led our market to be the most expensive in the country, and some of them make sense. Property taxes, low lending rates, high immigration rates. But then there are those that are a little enraging, like wealthy investors who drive up property values by purchasing homes not to live in, but simply to sit on for capital gains. They say this, foreign investors still own somewhere around $38 billion of the city's housing supply, despite the fact that we have a non-resident speculation tax of 15%. Oh, you mean to say it didn't work? Well, we did see, if I were to be honest, we have seen a big drop in foreign investment since 2017. I think that trend will continue. And there's also a phenomenon right now of livable properties sitting uninhabited for years after owners claim they are renovating or selling the building to developers or while they wait for someone to pay a high enough price. If you got enough money, what do you need to deal with the rental issue for? Just hold the thing. It's just parking money, right? These are all things that some think could be changed by the vacant home tax, which would help increase supply and deter people from buying properties to flip. Using them simply as investments without offering them up to renters or from letting them fall into unused disarray amid an ongoing housing crisis. I feel like it would fall into unused disarray if you put it in the hands of a renter versus leaving it vacant. To me, it sounds a little safer. But anyways, though the city has deferred previous actions in order to study whether or not such a move would actually produce enough tangible benefits to residents, a vacant home tax right now is part of the housing TO plan for tackling homelessness and other issues in Toronto. It's on the table. It is on the table. And according to the plan, a final report of the feasibility of the tax is due to face committee and council by this December. What month are we in now? September, October, November, December. You heard it here first, guys. You heard it here first. 3 months before the announcement. You're going to get a little bit crazy probably into November, December. But recognize this could be, and very most likely, in my opinion, I think it will be approved by council in December. Because at the end of the day, we do have a housing crisis. As much as people think prices are going to drop through the floor, those floors are so expensive per square foot. Other future policies and financial tools that will be necessary to ramp up the supply of affordable rental housing across the city includes a vacant home tax. And this is part of the, when I say housing TO, it's part of the housing TO 2020 to 2030 implementation plan. That was, in fact, the direct reading from that plan. In cities such as Vancouver, right now, they actually have one. They have a 1.25% on the value of the home if the owner's principal residence or is deemed to be unrented for 6 months. So if you don't rent it for 6 months or more, you're subject to this tax. And the city cites returning empty or underutilized properties to use as long-term rental homes for people who live and work in Vancouver. That's the thought, right? That would be the thought here too. One could very fairly argue that Toronto shares the same reasons, and it seems that online there is great support for the idea, though many believe it should be higher than 1.25%. There's a lot of articles and Twitter feeds here talking about people that are so excited about this idea of a tax. If it doesn't seem to affect you, why not, right? Tax them! Tax them all! Don't tax me though, but tax them. And still another, it's only 1% in Vancouver, listen to this quote, which is not nearly enough when the place goes up by 10% a year. The vacancy tax needs to wipe out almost all the gains. Hit them where it hurts. Realistically, the tax needs to be at least 5% per year if the property is vacant for more than a few months, and this should go for any property in the city. Okay, chill, dog. Many also point out that the tax would obviously not only provide great benefit and relief to Torontonians, but also to the city itself, which is struggling right now amid COVID-19's deficit. Obviously, housing is a problem. Housing is a problem. This, by the way, is unless right now the foreign money dance. Oh, no, sorry. I'm reading this too seriously. This is a joke. Bring it back. This is actually a really good one. Here we go. That is unless the foreign money dances around this tax like they do the foreign buyer tax, which we've seen and we've continued to hear that's a problem. And you know what you get when you cross two slow dancing, I'm not moving on. This is too good. I have to finish it. You know what you get when you cross slow dancing with Arabic royalty dancing chic to chic. It's good. I swear. I'm just not good at it. My language is off today. All right. But we're going to have to wait till the end of the year to see if this is something that finally gets put into motion. Here's, as I've kind of thought through the implications of this vacant home tax, here's some of the things I think of. Here's a few problems. Problem number one, it will halt if for whatever's left, the foreign investment that's still trickling into our country, though it's already been happening since 2017. So it's not anything new. So I don't think that's the biggest problem. It's the first problem I got listed, but it's not the biggest problem. What it could do, a bigger problem, is it could further push people to go outside of Toronto. Because if Toronto applies a vacant home tax, then maybe I'll just go to Mississauga. And did you just fix the issue? Because you're just creating further problems for the city itself. You're just pushing them away, which is great news, by the way, for neighboring cities. Problem number three, which I believe is the biggest one, just like 2017, the problem of 2017 was not limiting foreign investment. The problem was psychology. The psychological impact of now saying we're going to put a vacant home tax is going to freak people the hell out. It will. All of these things will. Add COVID, right? Add now an Airbnb, this Airbnb thing we're adding tax. All of these things create a psychological impact. If there's going to be a problem with prices in the coming months, it's not going to be because demand wasn't big enough to meet the added supply. It's going to be because you're freaking people the hell out. So calm down. What this really points to, if you think through the whole thing, is it points to a lack of supply of housing. The reason people are pushing for this is because we know that in the mid to long term, we are going to have a serious concern for price being too high and lack of affordability in our city. Rightly so. So before you go and say, oh, prices are going to go through the floor, recognize all the policies being put in place are to further dampen that price because we know that that is not true. And so does the city. Right. And let's also, I get a lot of confusion. Let's not confuse foreign investment with immigration. They're very different. Foreign money, it just increases the price for the rest of us. And this is the thinking behind the empty home tax. But immigration is population growth. And that's important because you know what happens if a king and queen have no children? A receding airline. I'm going to leave it there, guys. I hope you had some fun. Make sure you leave us a comment. Leave us, if you're following us on iTunes again, make sure you jump over, give us a 5-star review, and reference how great my jokes are. That would make me smile. And I'll see you guys next time. Take care and keep it real.